There are three people that John talks about in this third letter: Gaius, Diotrephes, and Demetrius. Take a look at Demetrius first. It would be great to have a reputation like Demetrius. In verse 12, John writes, "Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth itself. We also add our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true." You couldn't ask for a better thing to be said about you than what he has to speak about Demetrius. Unlike Diotrephes, who John has very little good to say, in verse 9 he says, "I have written something to the church, but Diotrephes, who likes to put himself first, does not acknowledge our authority." John plans to have words with Diotrephes later to try to set him right. But it's the third person mentioned in the letter that I want to talk about this morning. John has some really lovely things to say to Gaius in these first six verses. And in doing so, I think John gives us a clear and some real simple advice on how to encourage one another. I want to make that the subject of our exhortation this morning. How do we encourage one another? You know it's one of the things you should do, but how do you go about doing it? What does it actually look like? What does it feel like? Take a look again at these first six verses. He writes, "The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth, beloved, I pray that all may go well with you and that you may be good in health as it goes well with your soul. For I rejoiced greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Beloved, it's a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified to your love before the church." So John's writing, he's writing to a specific person, this Gaius, someone he seems to have known very well, but I think it's a text that we can use as an example to us. You know, your name's not Gaius, but he's writing this message to us. And I want to call out four specific ways that we can encourage one another from these six verses. First, verse 1, to affirm your love for that person. And then in verse 2, to pray for their spiritual and their physical health. And in verse 3 and 4, to express joy for their obedience. And in verses 5 and 6, to commend them for their good works. So let's talk about affirming your love for someone. You notice what he in these first five verses, he's just saying "beloved" over and over again, right? The first thing he does is refer to him as "beloved Gaius," and I think that would be encouraging to Gaius to hear that. He does it. He's not afraid to do it in front of everybody. This is a letter, written to the whole group, and he knows that Gaius is going to be there. So he refers to him over and over, his beloved. He says it in verse 1. He says it in verse 2. He repeats it a third time in verse 5. He even comes out in verse 1, and he tells us directly that Gaius is the person whom I love in truth. So four separate times, John takes the effort to affirm his love in public for his friend. It kind of makes you wonder who Gaius was. It makes you wish that you knew a little bit more about who this person was that John loved so much. There's other New Testament references to men named Gaius. One of them was a traveling companion of Paul in Acts 19 and 20. So there had to be at least two or three different men named Gaius. It would have been maybe a fairly common name at the time. We have no reason to believe that John's Gaius is the same person as Paul's Gaius. All we have to go on is what John says about him right here. And what John does say is that he loves Gaius deeply. And that would no doubt, I think, be a tremendous encouragement to Gaius to have someone tell you that they love you. We have very few people in our lives that really would be able to tell us they love us. You have your immediate family, hopefully, and sometimes even your immediate family forgets. I think it's an encouragement. It would be an encouragement to me. I think it was to Gaius. And I think it would be for you too, to have someone just tell you, you know, affirm to you, remind you that they do love you. It isn't enough that your brothers and sisters assume that you love them. Don't convince yourself that, you know, you do nice things and you say nice things and you told them once in 1987 and you haven't changed your opinion since then. So, you know, they know that you love them. I think it might be a good idea for you to explicitly tell them. Affirm your love to them and go ahead and tell them. Whether you use terms of endearment, like beloved, like John does so many times here, or whether you specifically tell the people you love, it's an important element, I think, in encouraging one another. It's one of the hardest things for me to do, I think, is to remember to tell people what I think about them. You know, when someone does a good job, I appreciate that, and I have to remember to go ahead and tell them, you know, you did a good job. That was very helpful. Thank you. And it's the same thing with us and our love for each other. It's hard to remember to go to the person and say, you know, want to let you know that I do love you. How do you express your love? Are the believers around you encouraged with your expressions of love towards them? Do they know that you love them? How do they know? If there's any question in their minds, encourage them by telling them of your love and showing them your love. He goes on in verse 2, and he prays for his physical health. He says, I pray that all may go well with you and that you may be in good health as it goes well with your soul. I think that's the second way that we can encourage one another. If you're looking to encourage your brothers and sisters, pray for them. Take the opportunity to pray for their physical and their spiritual health. Notice that John prays that because of his love for Gaius, he wants him to prosper. That's a great idea. It's a great concept. You know, I want you to prosper. I want everything in your life to go well. I want things to be fruitful and happy for you. He actually says that all may go well with you. Isn't that a great prayer for your brothers and sisters? I pray that all goes well with you. First, in the obviously general sense, and then he adds more specifically, he wants them to be in good health. So he's concerned about his physical well-being. He's concerned about his health. Prays for his health. And look, I love it how he says, even as it goes well with his soul. So it could be that this was just a wishful prayer that with John not having any specific reason to be concerned about Gaius' health. You know, Gaius could have been in good health, but John loves him, and he just prays that he continues in good health. Or it could be that word had reached John that Gaius' health was not good. But what's more important is that John goes on to pray that Gaius would be well of soul. Soul, it's a Greek word, as you know. It's the word psyche. It's the word from which we derive the word psychology. So John is praying not just for his health, but for his good psychology, right? Not only for his physical health, but he's praying for his spiritual health, his mental health. Because that really is at the core of our being, and it's at the core of our relationship to God. You may be healthy or sick, but that doesn't affect, you know, it doesn't affect your relationship to God, your spirituality. Certainly, I think John wants him to be physically healthy, just as you and I would want our brothers and sisters to be physically healthy. But far more important than the issue of physical health is their need for us to be spiritually healthy. You know, emotionally rich and blessed and healthy at the innermost core. We can spiritually prosper even when our health isn't at its best. You know, you know several people you've met in your life who are struggling with real physical problems, and yet their faith is strong. Their spirituality is healthy. But it's important to not allow ourselves to become sick on the inside, to not allow our spirituality to decline and to get sick. Whatever would threaten us in either dimension, physical or spiritual, is a reason for us to pray for one another. John's prayer made me think, you know, what if such a prayer was made to God for me and it was answered? What condition would I find myself in physically and spiritually? Did you ever compare your physical health to your spiritual health? I think too often we give a lot more attention to our physical health, when in reality it's our spiritual health that's more important. I've had a bit of a cough, a little runny nose for about 5 days, and I've been taking the airborne and paying attention to getting extra sleep. The physical things become quickly apparent. You know, if your back is sore, if you've got an ingrown toenail, you know, these things are you see them and you address them, you take care of them right away. You go and you talk to somebody, maybe a specialist who can help you with that problem. But what about your spiritual health? Are we just as in tune to that? You know, do we feel when we start to get some spiritual sniffles, when we get a spiritual ingrown toenail, or our spiritual back is sore? I think it would be a great encouragement to know that your brothers and sisters are concerned enough about you that they spend their precious time in prayer praying for both your spiritual health and your physical health. And that's a way you can encourage others. You can pray for others. Lift up in your prayers your brothers and sisters, their physical health and their spiritual health. I had to ask myself, are my prayers balanced between physical and spiritual needs? Do I find myself kind of focusing more on prayers for the physical arena of someone's life? When you find out someone has cancer, or you find out someone is sick, or they have an illness, and we kind of just don't pay attention to the people who are sad, the people who are weak, the people who feel disconnected from God. Or maybe you find yourself praying only for the spiritual needs of people. You know, spend all your time praying that, you know, God will bring them back to the meeting, and you forget to look around you for those who are suffering physically. So there's a balance between remembering to pray for both the physical and the spiritual needs. And I think it's a great way to encourage one another to give concentrated prayer for the material and the immaterial needs of your brothers and sisters. The third way is to express your joy for their obedience. Now that's a weird one, and I've never done that one before, but look at verses 3 and 4. That's what he's saying. He says, I rejoiced greatly. Sure, I mentioned the sore throat. He said, I rejoice greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. So I think this is a third way that we can encourage each other, is to express joy for their obedience to God. It's something I've never done before, and I've never given much thought to before, but you notice how John begins, even in verse 1, that he loves Gaius in truth, he said. And he says in verse 3 that certain brothers and sisters known to both John and Gaius have been giving testimony to John of Gaius' personal commitment to the truth. So when you hear about someone who is doing well, we hear about many people who are not doing well, and we get depressed and it brings us down. But what about when you hear about someone who's doing well? Shouldn't that do the opposite? Shouldn't that cause us to rejoice and make us happy? So John encourages Gaius directly and sincerely and truthfully by saying that he knows that he's walking in the truth and that it brings him joy. It's great to see that John just doesn't just mention the fact that Gaius is walking in the truth, but he says that I rejoice greatly when I heard that you were walking in the truth. There's no greater joy than to see your own physical or spiritual children walking in obedience to the truth? Do you express your joy for the obedience you see being lived out in the lives of the people in your ecclesia? How much do they hear about our negativity towards them when we notice the things that are wrong, as opposed to hearing about our joy when we notice the things that are good? So if you've ever said before that you didn't like what was going on because of this or this or this that was happening, then I think you're obligated to say some of the opposite as well, and tell people that you do like what's going on because you see this and this and this happening. You know, attune yourself to see the good that goes on around you and not just the bad. And when you see it, be happy about that, and feel free to tell them that you're happy you see this. You know, the families comes to Sunday school every week and brings their young children, and that's encouraging, and that's helpful. And tell them, you know, it really, really does my heart good to see you here every week with the kids, shirts tucked in or not. So when you see genuine obedience and positive steps of patterns being taken of people trying and doing good and walking the truth, express your joy to them and tell them that you're happy about that. It's going to seem awkward at first, and you might cry from the podium, but I'm sure that the more you do it, the more comfortable it's going to become. And it may even become one of the things that the Lord uses to cause them further spiritual growth. You know, you do that, and they're going to be encouraged, and they're going to be better and stronger because of it. And the last way to encourage one another comes from verses 5 and 6, where he commends them. You can commend the person for their good deeds. He says, it's a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified to your love before the church. So this fourth idea is to encourage one another by commending them for their faithful efforts towards other believers. John tells Gaius it's a faithful thing that he does in all his various ministry efforts for the brothers and sisters who are laboring in the gospel and have come to him for help. It's easier to serve those we know and who we readily and easily love and appreciate. It's more challenging to reach out to people who are strangers to us. And these people are strangers to Gaius. People who, brothers and sisters, granted, but they were brothers and sisters who he had never met. They were complete strangers to him. Even though he had never met them, they came to him for help, and he ministered to them. And John was now hearing, you know, through the grapevine, these people were thanking Gaius. They were thankful that Gaius had done that, and they were encouraged by Gaius' effort. So when John hears about Gaius, you know, being so nice and reaching out and being hospitable to strangers, he tells Gaius that. Encourages Gaius by commending him for these faithful works that he was doing. It's a great testimony to Gaius, and I think it would have been encouraging to have him commended by John for his actions. These were precious brothers and sisters now. They were no longer strangers to Gaius. They were people who now he had spent some time with. People who had real needs, and he had helped them. He had shown them love with his selfless service, and it had overwhelmed that person, and now they were probably close. They were tight friends forever. So we can be a little bit like John, and we can look around us and see brothers and sisters who are doing things, people who are helping out, people who are being kind to others, and we can encourage them by commending them for what they've done. Their acts of faithfulness, their acts of loving kindness, their acts of service to the strangers in their lives. There's a good picture of the opposite of Gaius. Look at this man, Diotrephes, in verse 10. He refuses to welcome the brothers, and he also stops those who want to and puts them out of the church. I mean, talk about opposites. Gaius and Diotrephes couldn't be more opposite. One is loving and he serves complete strangers. He welcomes them in and makes them feel like they truly are his brothers and sisters. And the other was so self-centered and self-serving that he refused to help these brothers and sisters, and he wouldn't even let other people help them. One is condemned by John, and he's going to get what he has coming. The other is commended by John for his faithful and loving actions. How scary it would have been for Diotrephes to hear John say that he was going to have some words with him when he gets there. But how encouraging it would have been for Gaius to hear John commend him for his good deeds. And how encouraging it would have been for Gaius to hear John express joy over his obedience to the faith. And how encouraging it would have been for Gaius to hear that John was praying for both his physical and his spiritual well-being. And how encouraging it would have been for Gaius to hear John affirm his love for him 4 times in this one letter. We don't know much about this man named Gaius. This is the only occurrence of him in the Bible. But we can rest assured that with the kind of encouragement Gaius received from John, he would have gone on to become a wonderful brother. We can be sure that Gaius would have become well known as Ecclesia for the good things he did for others, because John took the time to encourage him. Let's also take the time to encourage one another. So as we close, our thoughts turn to our Lord and our Savior, the Lord that we're here to remember today. We remember in this bread and this wine what he did for us, that we might obtain salvation. And our thoughts turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, where it says, "For God has not destined us for wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we might live with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up."